Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
The Match Ball.
Hello there. Levi Solicitors bring you the podcast with 10% discount on your legal fees available via levisolicitors.co.uk/thesquareball. I'm Dan Moylan. Hello. Michael Normanton's with me.
Hello.
So is Moscow White. Daniel Chapman.
Hello.
Don't you hate these end of season dead rubbers where there's just nothing at stake but the whole soul of football? Well,
I'm all for a meaningless game, to be honest. I want to see far more. Just non-stop, endless games with the same teams playing each other for no discernible reason. But that wasn't one of those, was it? Because it was Leeds United against Liverpool for the final time ever. So it was nice that we got a point out of it, at least, I suppose.
Was it the final time ever? Or is it one great big bluff by those set of 6/12 bastards?
Who knows at this stage? It feels like they might be serious about it this time around. I know there's been a lot of bluff in the past. It feels like they've had a word with banks and stuff this time. It seems like they might mean it. And if they do, yeah.
Should we just get them to fuck off and leave us all alone?
It's an option, certainly. Although I like playing Liverpool, though, I've got to be honest. We spent years not playing them and then we got promoted and thought, oh, that's nice. We'll get to renew some of these rivalries and then they're trying to leave again straight away, which would be a shame. But I did go to Elland Road tonight, at least. Experienced a bit of atmosphere.
Yep, we saw some people down there shouting at a coach.
So that was nice. I don't think Jurgen Klopp was that impressed by all that stuff, but...
Fuck him.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Are you ready to bid Liverpool farewell, Moscow?
I don't know if they're ready to go. They've got a website, got a logo, and they have spoken to the banks, but it does all seem quite vague. Nobody told Jurgen Klopp, which is why he doesn't like the T-shirts and all that. He's very upset about not knowing things. I've just been glancing at the stuff from what players of the clubs involved have been saying. None of them seem to know anything about it. The plans are half-assed. And so it would be kind of funny to make them go through with it. Go on. See if you can turn that into something. That the bit that gives it away for me is, you know, where it says, we'll start a women's league as well. All right, go on then. Start it with Liverpool, the women's team, which are terrible and don't get into the men's training ground, and not Lyon, who dominate women's football like anything going, like Liverpool and Manchester City dominate the men's league. They haven't thought any of that through.
I hope you're not suggesting the women were an afterthought in this plan to make loads of money.
I think the plan has probably not gone further than there's loads of money there. Who says? That bank, JP Morgan. All right, what's the downside? Well, we get loads of money. Okay, let's do it. And that's it.
I am closer to your opinion on this. I'm not entirely convinced it's got as much substance to it as they would have you think. It's a website, isn't it, at the minute, and a PR firm, and yeah, a lot of noise from people in prominent positions, and that's it, really.
And when Manchester City and Chelsea were sort of dragged into it at the back end of last week, they've obviously been talking about it longer, but not convinced, and kind of being pulled in along the lines of, well, you might miss out if we do this, so you want to be in with us, and kind of going, all right then, what do we have to do? Put this on your website, all right? And it'll be interesting to see whether clubs like, whether Manchester City or Chelsea are maybe the ones who are a weak on this, who when they see the backlash, when they see nobody in Germany going for it, when they see the protests at Elland Road tonight and they hear the reaction from their own players, maybe even their manager if he's not had any consultation about it, if they might be the ones to go, sorry, yeah, we won't. But then, you know,
it does
why
feel,
should we take them back?
Yeah, it does feel to me like what they've done is aimed squarely at the Champions League, but they are totally trying to have their cake and eat it at the same time.
It's just the assumption that we're going to do this thing over here and you're all going to be fine with that, aren't you? You're going to be fine with us just going off and earning
and even if
loads
you're not,
more money than the rest of you.
Even if you're not fine, we're so powerful, you're just going to have to suck it up and have us back anyway.
I've gone through various stages with this over the last 24 hours of wanting them just immediately thrown out to thinking, well, maybe you could throw out those versions of those clubs and just invite in some new teams. You
FC, FC United of Manchester are waiting to step right in.
Exactly. You just say, well, if you guys, you can get a if you can get a team together, the place is yours. It's up to you. Man, I'm afraid the Glazers, you've lost all your money that you put in, which is a shame. You can try your European thing and that might, it might work out for you. You might make your money back on that equally. You might not.
And in much the same way that the franchise system does work, it tends to filter out teams that are too close together. There's no need for a new Phoenix club from both Arsenal and Tottenham. So just have one. Stick it at Wembley.
The Dublin Hotspurs. Yeah. Go down a storm over there.
FC North London, who play in, I don't know, where can they play? Should we have them play in China? Somewhere like that? Just for shits and giggles?
I think that's what these people want, isn't it? I think they'd rather be playing games in China than playing in London in the first place. It would be, forcing them to actually do it would be interesting because I think they'd fuck it up quite badly. They're not clever people. They can act clever, but look at Arsenal. Look at how Arsenal have been run for the last 10 years or so. Arsenal had absolutely everything. I don't know what more Arsenal could possibly want or need to be a successful football club in terms of finances, playing staff, the stadium, the training ground, the history, the prestige. Everything is there. Any player in the world would love to play for Arsenal, so all they have to do is sign them and play them. And they fuck it up season after season and they're ninth. They go into this thing. They're not going to do any better. They'll still be ninth. They'll just be ninth in a smaller league and look worse. But they'll have the guarantee of money so they won't go broke paying Mesut Ozil to not play for them. And that's, you know, where it's all come from. I don't understand with the people running these football clubs. They don't, if they want the money, stop giving it all to the players. That's why Real Madrid £1 billion in debt. That's why Arsenal can't function as a football club anymore. It's because they keep paying ridiculous wages to footballers. Real Madrid giving £500,000 a week to Gareth Bale to play golf. Why not stop doing that and then you save some money and then you don't need all this money from the banks and then you can just stay playing in this league instead of coming up with this. All that's going to happen, if they get so much more money, they'll just give all the players involved huge pay rises because the things that they may have to turn down if FIFA come through with the harsh punishments, say, right, none of those players can play international football. Look at Harry Kane. Say, right, you're not going to be able to play at the World Cup, captain England to winning a World Cup. Okay, well, you're going to have to pay me £1 billion.
A week.
A week. But you're going to have to pay me £1 million a week to not do that. Say, oh, well, that's all the money that we're getting from JP Morgan. Right, give it to me. Otherwise, cancelling my contract and fucking off. So
the figures just get bigger.
They all seem like smart people running these football clubs, but all they seem to do as a job is take loads of money off broadcasters and then put some of their money on top and then give it all to 20-year-old footballers. I need to do the actual test and see who has made more money out of Manchester United, whether it's Ed Woodward or Harry Maguire. Who gets paid more by that football club? Because I would not be surprised if Harry Maguire is ahead on pounds and he's fucking rubbish.
I guess going into a small, closed-off ecosystem, they may try and introduce a wage cap, which then essentially builds in a guaranteed profit for club owners. And if they know that they're going to be paying far more than other leagues, then they can maybe get away with having a wage cap because the wage cap becomes like £1 million a week.
You can't tell us that they've thought this through.
They've all been...
No.
And lots of them of the clubs have been fighting against FFP anyway. A wage cap is the last thing that they're interested in. They want the freedom to spend all the money that they can possibly get their hands on, which is what they've been doing. And they're fucking rubbish at it.
It always goes to players. Absolutely. Right,
so I don't see the point. If they did, the way for them to solve their problems is actually to bring in a wage cap. If every club across football was capped at salaries of 70% of turnover, and then you pay, put the players on low salaries but high bonuses paid out of how much you make, and you can make as much money as you fucking want, get all the money you can from JP Morgan and Disney and whoever else, do all that stuff, do your documentaries and your image rights and everything. Shovel all that in, but make sure you never give more than 70% of it to the players. You can still build a better team than anybody else, and you can keep 30% and live like kings and queens. But it just, but then you say, oh, well, no, I mean, that would be a restriction on our sporting. Well, is it helpful to you to lose £1 billion and then have to tear up all of European football because you can't come up with a better solution to being £1 billion in debt than this?
No, I absolutely agree with you on the same page on that. It will all just filter to the players because that's what always happens. The marketing
team,
don't
Christ, even want it.
The slogan for the bloody league, your slogan for your stupid league is the best players and the best teams. So, well, how are you going to put together this Harlem Globetrotter scenario? You'll just give them all the money, won't you?
Essentially, yep. And it'll all go. And in Liverpool, if they need more money, they could sell Mo Salah and get someone like Ian Pervaeda on the bench because he's just as good. And he probably earns about 15 grand a week rather than like 150, 200 grand a week. That's a way of saving money.
And on the players, Pat Bamford has been speaking about after the game, but I think James Milner is probably more relevant, who says, I can only say my own opinion. I don't like it, and I hope it don't happen for the same reasons as everyone else. So James Milner, I mean, I know he's, you know, he's 40-odd now, so he's not going to have a long career in this Super League, but he is a player who could benefit, and he doesn't want it. Because he's fine. He's made enough money. It is getting to that. But Messi, does Messi want more money from Barcelona, or does he want to finally kill the pigeon that he's been chasing of winning the World Cup with Argentina so he can finally say he is as good as Maradona? What at this point does billionaire Lionel Messi need more? A pay rise and a bunch of fucking cameras in his, even more in his face than they are now? Or the sporting challenge that still exists for him. And the other side to this that we're not focusing on as much is sort of Leeds' place in the world. And I think one of the things that is bringing this about is clubs like Leeds, owners like Andrea Ratrizzani, and also clubs like Leicester, who he wants to imitate, who are actually what I was saying before about, you know, spending within your means and doing a good job of it, are starting to become a threat to these clubs, because there's now enough money in the Premier League, and has been for long enough, that a team like Southampton can actually start building quite a good squad. They sell Van Dijk, they put that money into players. Leicester sell Harry Maguire. Who did better out of Harry Maguire? Leicester did. They built half a team out of him, and now they're back into the top four. And so clubs with some nous and some sense and some control over what they're spending and what they're doing are starting to creep up and are above Arsenal and Tottenham and Chelsea and Liverpool. And so all those clubs, instead of going, oh, well, you know, the way this new generation of owners, perhaps they've got some interesting ideas about how to run a football club that doesn't involve just burning money. Instead of doing that, they've just gone, well, there's some money over there. Should we go and burn that and actually, cut these guys out of it?
If we burn that money, we can burn everything else that's around us as well. We can leave a trail of destruction in our wake. Because if we don't get that money over there, that's what we're going to do. So what's really instructive about this whole thing, I was trying to find, you know, a common thread of the teams that have done this. What's the single common factor? And it's turnover. It's down to turnover. And the one that singles that out is Tottenham, because Tottenham have got absolutely no right to be in there whatsoever. The only reason they are in there is because they're in the top 20 clubs with turnover in Europe. And they are there by virtue of the fact that they have a stadium that cost them £1 billion to build, and they're probably massively in debt and need to pay for that. And that's the only reason they think they've got a claim on that Super League, because they happened to have taken the decision to build a stadium in the last few years. That is the only reason.
They got to a Champions League final a few years ago, didn't they? That's really the sum total of what they've done in Europe or domestically since
for 50 years.
Since the 1960s.
Well, they won the FA Cup, didn't they? But
FA Cup, Wigan won the FA Cup. Are they going in there? Portsmouth have won it. Did they get a call?
Well, maybe
one of the ones that turned it down?
They're in three. Who knows? The secret three.
So, I mean, Spurs are not a successful club.
Yeah.
All those clubs are fucked. That's the thing. Jonathan Liu in the Guardian summed it up, and I shoved this in the propaganda email tonight. Barcelona, £1 billion in debt, facing one of the biggest financial crises in their history. Real Madrid couldn't afford a single big signing last summer. Juventus have to find £100 million by the end of June. Inter's owners sought emergency funding in February. You're right, Spurs are £600 million in debt over that stadium. That's why And then Liverpool, the problem, the risk is Liverpool is they might not get into the Champions League. And that's where it all, that's the kind of justification for it. And what Juventus are talking about is saying, well, we can't plan our finances properly because we don't know if we're going to be in the Champions League or not. So how can we possibly, you know, if there's a risk that we might not qualify, how can we plan for how much money we're going to spend? And it doesn't seem to occur to them that, well, don't plan to spend money that you might not get. Instead,
imagine risk and jeopardy being a part of football as well.
So instead, you remove all that and you just say, and it's there that the founders get all the money just for turning up, and that the prize money is going to be, I think the figures were something like you get 350 million euros for being a founder and part of it. And if you're one of these mythical five qualifiers who gets in, say Leicester get in, and then Leicester win it, the prize money is 30 million.
Yeah, it's half what the founders make.
Fuck all compared to what they get, just to make sure. But it's,
and then you're not guaranteed re-entry either.
No. And then, but the guaranteed thing is you get that 350 million a season essentially just for existing. So that means you can sensibly plan your finances and plan exactly how you're going to burn it, whether it's matches, a lighter, petrol, whatever accelerant you choose to use. And that's why Manchester City and Chelsea are slow to add themselves to this pile, because they're kind of like, well, we don't need it. We've got all the money we fucking need. And I'm sure there'll be some element of that with PSG taking the moral high ground, saying that, you know, there's two things. That one, their chairman's great mates with everyone at UEFA. And two, it's like, well, we're fine for money, actually. We're all right. We've got the Qatar. I don't know if you're aware.
So they're gas fields.
Yeah, we're all right for ready cash. And Bayern Munich as well. These aren't clubs with particular financial problems. So they're like, we don't need it. City, well, we'll come along if you say it's going to be this good. Well, we don't want to miss out. But then there is a core of the clubs who are driving it who are absolutely fucked. And that's why they want to get themselves back on this even keel. And it's not an even keel. I mean, I don't even think that the concept will work. I know there's a lot about future fans versus legacy fans, and that people will want star players in the future, and there might be some of that, but it's not going to be, it's just going to be a reality TV show, isn't it?
I'll tell you how Liverpool could have showed themselves a bit more cash, though, would be by winning this game, because then they'd have been pushing to the top four, the normal top four, wouldn't they? But they didn't bother.
Earn it. We earned a point tonight, which might earn us more Premier League millions. Tell you what.
They didn't even get a free T-shirt. They refused that gift.
Tell you what, let's just put a pin in this one for now, when we'll revisit it properly on the main podcast, which we're recording on Wednesday this week.
Probably have all changed as well.
Due to the mess around with the fixtures and a Monday night. Let's revisit it on Wednesday when we do the main show. But before we get into the actual football in the second half of this one, just sum it up for me in a few words or a sentence as you see it right now. Even a word.
Kick the greedy bastards out. Relegate them, deduct them points, make them play in their pants.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
There was some football tonight, and it did have a little bit of a feeling of after the Lord Mayor's parade about it, after the massive hoo-ha over the last 24 hours. But a good point in the end, I thought.
A righteous point. That's what I'm calling it.
Did it for the pyramid, didn't we? Did it for the integrity of the game. Standard bearers, Leeds United, and all that. you know, looking at it versus the game that we started the season with, that we obviously won on the opening day, etc., it's nice to see we've progressed. And again, it's reflected in what's happening against Man City, what's happening
against
Leicester.
We won on the opening day. We've only drawn now.
But you know what I mean, Moscow. Play the game. We've improved, haven't we? We seem to be better. I mean, Liverpool obviously still a very dangerous team, but I thought we rode out the bits that we needed to. We rode out the storm. And then in that second half, I thought we were really good.
Last half hour, we were the better team by a distance, I would say. And the first hour, they definitely had the better of it and we weren't creating anything. But it wasn't like, it was quite a different performance to that first game of the season where they had loads and loads of chances and they were carving us open. That wasn't particularly happening. Most of the problems we were causing ourselves with giving the ball away in key areas or just passing straight to them. The goal they scored, Melier came out for it when he maybe shouldn't have bothered, and it was just because Harrison was a bit asleep and someone ran in behind him. Like, it wasn't like they did it with a brilliant bit of football. Stuff went wrong defensively for us, I thought, as much as anything. And they were highlighting on Sky the amount of touches they had in our box. But they didn't lead to a great deal, did they?
I thought the goal was a great bit of football. Defensive errors aside, the only good bit of it was Melier coming out to try and stop it from our point of view. But then that pass was superb. You know, we were only inches off the mark and then Jota pinged it absolutely through. I wonder if we got a bit more caught in the occasion than Liverpool in the end. I think trying to wave the T-shirts in Liverpool's face quite as much was probably a wrong move from many perspectives, but the key one being that they came out wanting to stick it right up our bollocks. And it ended up being our players who had probably been more putting the T-shirts on, looking at the protests going on around the ground, doing all the bits about that, while Liverpool just kind of threw the T-shirts in the bin and went, right, let's go and get into these bastards and show them it's not our fun. You know, Milner is now quite there saying he has absolutely no interest in playing in a Super League, so why he should then be been bothered with the T-shirt about it. It's kind of here and there. Liverpool as an entity and a group of players, it was like two different Liverpools there tonight, one that doesn't particularly exist because it will be going away. And then the players who were wearing the shirts who, you know, just, it's Jim from Horsforth. Don't bother Jim with us. But I think that maybe gave them a bit more punch coming out. And you got to remember that our lot have come out of the Championship, their lot have come out of Champions League finals and have handled the pressure all the way to winning a championship, and probably a bit more able to internalise what has been going on over the last 2 days and use it as fuel than our comparatively inexperienced bunch, because we did just look kind of not sharp, not with it, not together, and the goal is probably a good example of that, where it's just kind of not quite there.
It was a very championshipy team though, wasn't it? I mean, going forward, Rodrigo and Rafinha would make a massive difference in that game, and we're without them. It was the championship team, wasn't it, essentially, with Llorente thrown into the mix. So it's maybe no surprise that they were the better team. But they weren't miles better.
It didn't feel like, you know, on the opening day, it felt like we were going to concede every time they came forward. And I know, so we had some hairy moments tonight, but it didn't feel like that today. It felt like it was a bit more balanced, because we did still have some moments in that first half. I mean, there's like, 20 minutes or thereabouts when Alioski fizzed that ball across. I think it led to a corner. Stuff like that. You know, Bamford had that chance as well, where he should have hit it earlier a few minutes after that. Or could he have taken it first time, or did he need to shift his body shape? Whichever it is, he missed that chance when he went through.
He needed to not kick it to the goalkeeper.
Yeah.
That was what he needed. He needed to kick it into the goal. And I was taking Michael's coaching tips over here, but it was that, yeah. He had some choices.
I need to have a word with Tyler Roberts, actually, tomorrow about that.
He's finishing.
The kicking it hard bit, he did that, but he didn't read the second sentence, did he? Not at the goalkeeper. Don't kick it at the goalkeeper.
I see where he's fallen down there.
It was a bit of a close your eyes and kick it, wasn't it? I mean, he's not Harry Kane.
It's just frustrating for him, because you want him to score, though, don't you? You're willing him to score, and he does so much right and then just lets it down at the final minute. Like, he did that shot, we remarked on it during that game, where he had that chance where he opened out his body and Alisson saved it. And it was very reminiscent, I think it was, of the QPR when they were in the colourblind mint green kit, and he side-footed that one home, didn't he? I think it was that game.
The XG tonight, 2.84 to 1.49.
Well,
although it does seem to have counted the Costa chance at the far post where he put it over, and I'm pretty sure he was offside for that. So because the flag went up. It didn't work.
But then the one moment where you did want him to open his body up was the one where he just stuck his head down and twatted it when he went through on Alisson. But nice ball from Pervader as well to send him through. Let's give him a mention actually, because I thought Pervader, he shifted the dynamic of that game somewhat when he came on.
I was going to say, we talked about needing Rafinha or Rodrigo to make the difference. Pervader did it. So we weren't that far behind Liverpool if bringing on Cheeky Ian can lift us to equalising and possibly winning the game, because it was a great touch. I like Pervader a lot. He's too fun for the world that Liverpool are trying to create. He did no business in a Super League. And he's clever with it. Like, he dribbles around, and then the passes that he tries that he's not yet, I don't think, quite good enough to bring off, are often quite inventive, and you don't see them before he hits them. And then the one that he settled for Roberts was just great. I'm happy he's getting back in the team again.
Those balls are good, yeah. He tries to sort of thread it in, or he drills it in almost, doesn't he, into the channel in behind the centre-half, sort of between the fullback and the centre-half.
Yeah, you don't see them coming. You have to try and look and see what he was aiming for, which is a good sign.
Well, we saw it once with that Roberts chance, didn't we? And he tried it again not long afterwards, but it didn't quite come off for him. But you're like, oh, yeah, fair dues for giving it a whiz. Felt a bit sorry for Bamford hitting the bar as well. That was a nice chance. The way he took it down was good. A bit unlucky.
He was a bit unlucky all night, was Bamford, I thought. I thought he actually played pretty well.
He's been the post-match spokesperson as well, pointing out that a lot of this energy around potentially financial matters would also be useful on subjects like racism, if we wanted to use all the protests and everything that's being generated. So he's not missed his chance to say something good, although he did miss his chance twice in the game.
And then 85 minutes. Nice to see the less spotted Pablo for once. At least to come on and see a little bit of him before he obviously goes.
Let's not remember him this way. Let's remember him when he was good.
Yeah, passing it straight out for a goal kick on one occasion. That's about all I can remember him doing. But
I'm sure he can be good again.
To be fair, he was looking for the runner that just wasn't there, the overlapping runner.
And virtually no time to do anything either. It was unfortunate that I was kind of thinking it's set up for him to come on and get an equaliser over there when he came on the pitch. But didn't need him, did we, in the end? Because Andy Hinchcliffe's favourite player was there to nod it in off the corner.
He's so relentlessly negative, is Hinchcliffe. I mean, you're a negative man, Michael, but in a sort of kind of cheery, pessimistic way. Whereas Hinchcliffe, I mean, imagine living with that. Imagine being his kids.
The thing is, I do recognise that good things happen. I just think nothing good can last, which is a different perspective to Hinchcliffe, who watches a game of football. I mean, I don't know what he would want from a game of football, because he seems to think both defending and attacking should be perfect at all times, and that will just result in does that give loads of goals or no goals? If it needs to be defended in particular, he seems to think it should always be better.
Yeah,
and that he was criticising Llorente on a few occasions, but then he did some brilliant things when he was bringing the ball out of defence and spraying passes around. Just completely brushed over it. Just sort of went.
I mean, yeah, he did.
Harrison now on the left with it. You think, well, what about the bit?
The bit where he's done the Cruyff turn on the edge of his own area and beaten two men?
Yeah, what about the bit that got us there, you fucking idiot? Anyway.
You should have played the man there as well and gone for his chin. Criticised his big chin. But Llorente, he was fun tonight. He had these occasional bomb scare moments, but it's part and parcel of the risk-taking football that we play occasionally, isn't it? And he was most times dead good with it.
He was a bit more like he was before he got good. Remember the first games when he...
That's what I mean, he was fun. He was fun.
Yeah.
And it doesn't count for so much because there wasn't a great deal at stake tonight, for us anyway.
Still don't want to see him doing it. But pinpoint header to equalise. Thought he directed that one very well. Like watching Lee Chapman at his best, guiding that in off the top of the crown of his head.
As an expert in finishing, Michael, what's your take on his header?
It was good.
Yeah.
Headed it where the keeper wasn't, into the ground, so it didn't go over the bar. Very sensible.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to head it over the bar from corners. Just ask Liam Cooper. He specialises in that. It was a good chance, but just a yard over.
But yeah, it was nice for him to get a goal, finally.
And our defence does look better since our £17 million centre-back has been regularly playing. We've improved, which is strange, isn't it? Given earlier in the season when everyone was saying what a shambles we were and we didn't have any centre-backs.
Yeah.
Now we've got some.
And there was no Cooper there. Those two tonight arguably are the second choice in both positions, aren't they? I think it's Cooper and Cock still considered to be the first choice pair if they were both available. So sticking our reserve centre-backs out against the mighty Liverpool as they still just about coming on.
I mean, it's just an honour to be on the same pitch as them, isn't it? We should be grateful for the chance.
I thought Stroik did pretty well as well, actually, overall. Did some quite nice passes out the back. Defensively, I don't think he's quite as good as Cooper all the time. He seems to, I don't know.
The whole thing felt a little bit sloppy though tonight at times, didn't it? I mean, and that's, you've got to give credit to Liverpool for how good they are and pressing us in the right areas and all that shit. But
yeah, I don't give them any credit. No? Fuck them. It's such a weird game, this. I feel like I didn't...
Do you feel a bit deflated?
Yeah, I feel like I didn't watch it properly. Yeah. I feel like I was just, I don't know. I've spent 24 hours just reading really miserable stuff on the internet about how this is all going to work and it all sounds terrible. And what's going to happen? And now it's like, oh, and there's a game on, by the way. The season's like still got 6 or 7 games left. And you're like, well,
I was,
what's the point?
I was a bit maudlin about the whole thing. And then today I just had a bit of a word with myself and I thought it through. I went for a swim today for the first time in over a year. It was nice. It helped. And when I was swimming, I just thought about this. I thought, even if the worst happens here and they do leave and the whole football system collapses, which is what you're afraid of, I'd still go. I'd still enjoy it because Leeds would still be there.
Yeah, that's one of the strange things about this. As a Leeds fan, I'm kind of worried about the whole thing, but I think I'd feel worse if I was a Liverpool fan today because it's...
Because you lose everything, don't you? I mean, I know we take the piss out of such a special club and all that, which, you know, they're not now. But you completely lose the soul and the identity of the club. At least the people who are in charge of us right now seem to get it.
I mean, Liverpool have lost that now already. Until FSG go, they're fucked. Because there's no way, there's no climbing down. Even if it doesn't happen, and there's no way, because of the way it's been delivered and the way it's been received, it's not going to be possible for Fenway to just turn around and go, oh, actually, yeah, we didn't mean it. It's gone past that point already. So if you're a Liverpool fan, the people running your club, you know now, it's all the... You know, everything falls away. You see them clearly as they are. You see what they want. You see what they're driving. Anything about, and referred to the women's team not being getting into the training ground, not having a space for them. Redesign that whole thing, and that wasn't thought of. Even though a huge part of their rhetoric is to say that we're two teams and one club. That so they've been banging on with that, and that's been one
more people's club, Moscow.
Well, no, but but separate to that, saying that no, we have a men's team and a women's team, but we're all one club. Rhetoric, and then they design a brand new training ground, spend millions on it, and there isn't a pitch for the women. And a lot of the Liverpool fans, that's been one of the ones where they've gone, that's bollocks. But you've been saying all this, and you do this, and now this is kind of like the final denouement, where you see, yeah, they are just all talk, they're all bollocks, and they're not running the club that Liverpool fans want, which is a special club and all the kind of aggravating things that go along with it. But they're not going to have the club that they want, and they know that now beyond any doubt. They're either going to have an absolute crock of shit, a joke parody of what their football club used to be on this Disney-fied Super League crazy town thing, or they're going to be cranking along still in the Premier League with a bunch of owners they hate managing. Well, running, employing a coach, if Klopp stays through all this, who isn't interested in this, with players who are all upset with it, the whole thing just is completely off course. So I think, yeah, Liverpool fans have probably got it, and the fans of all those clubs have got it quite hard of this.
I think you're right that even if there's a climb down from this, you never trust anything they do again, do you? No. It's the same as Bates sort of during the admin essentially saying, well, Leeds can shut down then. If I don't get to keep it, I don't want anyone to have it. And you, after that point, you think, oh, okay. So you've actually shown what you're all about there.
You have shown your hand, and we don't forget.
They will be crawling back after moving in with the secretary, won't they? If the owners have to go back and go, sorry, you are a special club, and I'm sorry for the thing I did. I'm back now.
Yep.
It's fine, isn't it? It's all going to be fine.
We've forgotten about the thing that I did.
Yeah. Everyone, are you still going on? You're still mad about the thing, aren't you? Okay. Right, well, we'll see. We definitely won't do anything like that again until we have the opportunity to. Then we definitely will.
That's why it does feel like there's going to be something in terms of punishment, or not at least caving into the clubs and giving them the kind of power and money that they want. UEFA did vote through its Champions League revamp today, which, to be fair, does look bollocks. I mean,
it's a shambles.
It's awful.
Can't pretend that UEFA are any good at any of this, but the one thing UEFA have is qualification for competitions and promotion and relegation from competitions. So, and as long as we can still have that to cling to, there's still the opportunity to change things, because nothing could change in that Super League once those 12 founders, they want 15 in the end if they could convince three more, are in place, because the Juventus chairman is running it. So it's never going to be reformed. With the Premier League, the Premier League board is made up of the chairman, maybe one day women of the football clubs, and they're all meeting tomorrow without those six to decide on a future course of action. So there is that, the new people in the room. We heard when, didn't Angus Kinnear get applauded in when Leeds were promoted, and the Norwich person had to get up and leave. They do that as Hanover. So there is that opportunity when clubs come in. If Brentford come up and their owner is involved, somebody with new ideas, things can change in the league that we have, rubbish as it is. But once it's locked down to 15 in charge of everything, that's where the don't forget Project Big Picture, that was a domestic attempt at a very similar thing, where you've got, wasn't it the top six would have the voting rights that the other 14 would have no ability to intervene on. They would get to decide all the big things, because they didn't see why a team like Norwich, who comes up and goes down again, should spend a season having their say. So the shitty as UEFA and the Premier League are, there is still the potential there to hope. And it's something we've not, Bielsa has spoken about this, and he kind of touches on UEFA's role. He says, of course it causes harm to football. This shouldn't surprise any of us. The stronger, powerful teams feel they have most influence in generating revenue in football. Logically, when the rest of teams are no longer necessary for them, they take privilege in their own interest and forget all of the rest. There are structures who should have put limits on the excesses of the big teams and anticipated this. And the importance now is the protection of the fans. So he's kind of saying, you know, why are UEFA, why are the Premier League creating situations that allow this kind of thing to happen? The real owners are the ones who love the badge. This is going to generate a huge amount of polemic. Let's see who talks in defense of the fans. The important thing is the protection of the fans. If there is an imbalance between prioritizing business interests and supporters' wishes, it should be towards those who love the game.
Thank you, Marcelo.
Yes.
Quick heroes and villains run through then. Villains.
I mean, just to seal it for Bielsa, his last saying is, some teams are bigger, but they should be conscious that we need each other.
Beautiful.
He's right. He's always right, isn't he?
It's a relief, because if he'd come out and said,
I'm all for it.
Yeah, sounds good. Like,
Super League sounds
me.
Fucking great. Those protesters, morons and dissidents and sick bots ruining the build-up to this game.
Right, go on then, heroes and villains quickly.
I thought Phillips and Ayling were both good.
What about Bridget Nielsen, our left back?
Yes, with the grey. Is it grey now, his hair?
Yeah.
I would say.
Another Gen Z reference there.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, he had some interesting squeals as well, didn't he, tonight? Alioski, you could hear them. And I thought Ayling did very well over on the right. I enjoyed him a lot, and I enjoyed him laughing at with Andy Robertson when I think he just won a free kick or something. He's just, Luke Ayling is what football should be. He's just enjoying it. He knows it's a knockabout. He's trying his best, and he's really good. But he also just thinks, well, it's just football, isn't it? He's just got that sort of a vibe about him, which I enjoy a lot.
There was Melier with the loudest shout
Cooper
I've yet heard. It wasn't even from a corner, was it? He was coming out for the ball. I think they should just mic him up fully.
Melier had a strange game, didn't he? I mean, I thought he was slightly at fault for the goal. I know you didn't think he was, but I did enjoy his Superman punch over the goal as well when he come for that corner and missed it. But then he got back in position, and as it was sort of probably just about dipping under the crossbar, he came charging back, didn't he, and punched over. It was quite enjoyable, and he kicked it to Mo Salah at one point. It was a mixed bag for him tonight.
Villains. Are we just doing Liverpool?
Mo Salah. Oh. Trampling all over Llorente, didn't he, right at the end of the game?
Yeah.
Didn't slow it down enough. If VAR had kept looking at that and slowed it down some more and gone
attempted murder
and gone from a few more angles, they could have talked the ref into a red card there, but they just showed it once and went, probably fine.
Klopp, for consistently missing the point and trying to turn it onto into a Leeds versus Liverpool thing, he, after the game, has said, the owners care about us but have not involved us in the process. I have nothing to do with it, nor the team. Leeds fans were shouting at us when we went for our walk, but we are not involved in this. Well, Liverpool fans were also shouting at you, That's the fucking point, is it's not along club lines, this. And I know maybe, I mean, this is another reason why the T-shirts kind of, when you're taking the moral high ground, you can't give away an inch of it. And I feel like putting the T-shirts in their dressing room has kind of given Klopp the chance to kind of go, oh, they're picking on us, which he didn't. He's got a thread to pull out there that it would have been better not to let him have, but it's not along club lines. Fans from all different clubs came to Elland Road to shout at Klopp. And, you know, whether he likes it or not, he's wearing the Liverpool badge. He is representing Liverpool Football Club. He is paid by Fenway Sports Group. If they're not telling him things, then that's his problem. And it is, I would have some sympathy for him in that situation, not having the answers. It's a bit like when Chiellino used to send managers out and they were having to answer questions about what Chiellino was up to. It's that. It should be the owners of the clubs that should be answering all these questions, and they are, in a sense, hiding behind Klopp. But, you know, Bielsa's not hiding behind anybody. Admittedly, he's not involved, but he will have his say about these things. And of course, he's going to get asked about it. And of course, it's not a fucking Leeds versus Liverpool thing.
It is tough because I was down there, Elland Road today, and people were shouting things at the coach, and it was directed at Liverpool as a football club. I can understand why, if you were leaving that coach and there's people singing, "You're a greedy bastard," you're thinking, well, it's not me. I'm just like Liverpool. Liverpool's reserve goalkeeper.
No, but everyone understands
that. That's what I mean, though. They need to understand that they are the most obvious visual representatives
when they
of
sing,
Liverpool.
You'll never walk alone. You know, they didn't write that song for Trent Alexander-Arnold. He happens to be wearing the shirt of the club that they sing the song about. So
it's intellectually dishonest to pretend that you don't understand what it's about.
Yeah, Michael. Yeah.
No, I'm
dishonest, yeah. Intellectual.
Sick of it.
I'm suggesting that the players, I can see where the players would think, well, this has nothing to do with us, but then they need to recognise that, well, who else are you going to shout
at? You might not want it to be about you, but it is, because you're wearing the badge on your chest.
Exactly.
Right, let's wrap it up there then. We'll return with the main show, recording it on Wednesday. Look out for propaganda. I've got a feeling that might be interesting. We'll record that on Wednesday ahead of the main show as well.
Although I was listening to Arsenal Fan TV and Stretford Paddock to see what they had to say about all this stuff, and it was like it entered a different world. It was all really sensible and somber for a change. It was...
So they can do it.
Yeah, bizarre. Very strange. So I don't know what the Scousers are up to, but we'll have to wait and see. Hopefully a last-minute equaliser will get them back onto some conspiracy theories or something.
We'll speak to you later in the week. See you in a bit.
The Match Ball.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real, frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club, with me, Maisie Williams. And each week, we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics, all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.